In ape speak, that means you're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Episode 70, Tarzan, Attack of the Disney Theories.
This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with over 150,000 downloadable titles to choose from. And for this episode, we recommend Tarzan of the Apes by Edgar Rice Burroughs. This is the book that inspired the movie, so read the original. You can download any book of your choice or this one at rotoscopers.com/audible. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers. Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Dumbo's, and everything in between. My name is Chelsea Robson, and we are so glad to have you. I'm here with my co-hosts, Morgan Stradling and Mason Smith.
Hello, nurse.
Hello, all right.
Woohoo, I got Mason to laugh.
What? I always laugh at you. I mean, I always laugh with you.
So for anybody who's new joining us today, we basically are just a bunch of friends. We get together every other week and we talk about an animated movie. And today we are talking about the amazing movie from 1999, Tarzan.
I forget what he says. Yeah. Hey, tonight we are going to party like it's 1999.
Yes.
The next time we use a Prince reference, one of us will either have a red Corvette or be wearing a raspberry beret.
Or both, please. In my arms. Yes, you'll be in my heart. From this day on, now and forevermore. All right, so we are going to be going into our nerdy couch discussion today. So, I don't know if you guys have been paying attention, but there have been a lot of these crossover type theories out there. I mean, you had like the Pixar theory, where basically it's put forth that all of the Pixar movies are somehow intertwined into the same universe as just different parts of a story. And because of that, there were a lot of other theories that came around, and that was the Frozen crossover theory. Have you guys ever heard of this?
I have.
Refresh my memory.
Okay, so here's what happened. Basically, they put forth this theory saying that Frozen, Tangled, and Little Mermaid were all the same story, parts of the same story. Basically, because of the moment in Frozen where you had Rapunzel and Eugene walk by as Anna's coming out of the palace for the first time. Basically because of that one thing, they're like, oh, they must have been all together. And so the theory says that Rapunzel is actually cousins to the Frozen princesses, and they were there to kind of help inaugurate the new queen. Part of this theory actually says that the parents of Anna and Elsa were actually going to Flynn Rider and Rapunzel's wedding when their ship was tragically sunk. Well, they decided to move this forward and saying, oh, that ship in the bottom of the sea where the Little Mermaid goes and finds the Dinglehopper, that was Anna and Elsa's parents' ship.
Anna.
What?
Yeah. So this is what is put out there. Anna, you're right. Sorry.
Stuck in your old ways.
I know, right?
Why don't we just take this a bit further and say that Captain Hook is actually Anna and Elsa's dad, and they actually didn't die in the storm. They actually got whisked off to Neverland, and that ship is actually actually their ship. That seems just as plausible to me. Sorry, keep going, Chelsea.
Then this next part of the theory could not happen if that happened.
Exactly. This next part of the theory, the reason why I bring this to our discussion today is because there's another part of it. Around the same time of this whole everything was going up in like theory world, theorizing, like I remember watching Twitter, the Twitterverse, and a lot of the different people who were working at Disney and Pixar or whatever were always throwing up their own like, oh yeah, and then this happened. Oh yeah, and then this happened. Well, the makers of Frozen, who decided to go on Reddit, like people were asking questions, and one of the questions was, where were the king and queen planning to go when they lost their lives at sea? Jennifer Lee comes in and says, a wedding. According to Chris Buck, they didn't die on the boat. They got washed up onto shore of Jungle Island. The queen gave birth to a baby boy, they built a treehouse, and then got eaten by a leopard. So, for you guys...
This is what Chris Buck wrote?
This is what Jennifer Lee said that Chris said. So, uh-huh.
And Chris is also the director of Tarzan.
Right.
So, of course, he's throwing it back to his old movie.
Throwing it back in there. I don't know. I just want to see what your guys' thoughts are on the whole Disney theorizing. And if you guys think it's true, like, what could happen.
This is pretty extensive. There's even a map of the world that shows where the shipwreck would be, where the Tarzan storm would be.
Right.
And that somehow connects Arendelle, the Caribbean, because that's, I don't know where that is. I don't know what that has to do with it. And then the Tarzan storm in Africa.
No, the Little Mermaid is in between. France. No, the Little Mermaid is in sort of the sea between Denmark and Netherlands.
Yeah, that's where they think, because it was around Denmark area. But, you know, there's other theories saying that because the crab is Jamaican.
No, he just washed up.
He just is.
Okay, hold on. I'm completely debunking this theory because in Tarzan, they, you know, when they wash ashore and they happen to have their whole life washed ashore with them, they have a photo of the mom, the dad, and the baby. Where the heck? Okay, first off, this means that Anna's mom had to be like 8 or 9 months pregnant when she boarded the ship. She does not look it. In the movie, okay? Then that means she either had to have had the baby on the ship, have a photographer on the ship who could also, you know, print out the photographs on the ship, stick it in a frame, just so they could have that picture of baby Tarzan with the parents.
Hey, haven't you ever been on a cruise?
Maybe they had a glassmith on the...
I have been on a cruise. I know modern day cruises love to line the walls with photographs, but I'm not buying in the 1890s this happening. But they were royalty, so who knows?
Hey, that's just part of their entourage.
I totally agree with Morgan, and I don't know. Did this all come from this one guy on DisneyTheory.com?
These ones, yeah. But, you know, there's a whole bunch of other ones out there that were, like, going along with it.
All right. If our listeners have the website open right now, just follow along with me. Okay. The screenshot of Anna and Elsa's parents looks nothing like the Tarzan parents. Mother went from a brown hair to a redhead, and you know, kind of reddish blonde, dirty blonde guy went to like super, super dark haired.
Hey, months at sea will do that to you.
Hey, it really will. And also, I also see them attempting to draw similarities between Jane's father looking like the Duke of Weaseltown. Wesselton, excuse me. I also think that's dumb. I don't agree at all. From an animation standpoint, the body language and shape language of both characters is quite the opposite, actually. Duke of Weaselton leads with his chest. He's high-blown. He's got a triangular nose. That give away that he's mischievous. And Jane,
it's
Mr.
All about
Porter.
The nose.
Exactly. We'll get into Clayton later. Jane's father, Mr. Porter, is more of a circle-based character, and he leads with his hips and his stomach are more rounded and bulbous, making him more vulnerable and dopey.
Wait, what does this have to do with her parents?
they're trying. It
just
doesn't.
Down at the
That's
bottom.
The point.
No, because you have to read the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
Because this one leads to a different article that says that Belle is somehow related to Jane. And through the Duke of Weaselton.
Well, because they're the only brunettes in the Disney world.
Yeah, basically.
Here's the thing about
brunettes
these.
equals, yeah.
Here's the thing about these Disney and Pixar crossover theories. You can make anything happen.
It's true.
You can make any little plot line connect by just connecting them, basically. So I don't really see, I mean, they're kind of cute when you see them and you're like, oh, that's cool. But there are very few that seem very plausible to me. This Tarzan one, I don't buy. I do buy the original one that says the ship sunk at the bottom of the sea, and that's the ship that Ariel goes into, because just geographically, those all line up. And I think that's cute. But the ones that are just a big stretch, no thank you.
Plus, they're not addressing the time frame. I really don't think that, I really think it's about 19. Have they established what time era Tarzan is?
So apparently there are little hints throughout the movie that sort of give us an idea of when Tarzan was set. For example, she dates one of her paintings or her sketches August 17th. And this is around the Victorian era. So the only days that kind of where August 17th fell on a Saturday, because she wrote Saturday, August 17th, are either 1889 or 1895. So also, you know, there are slides that show the Eiffel Tower, which was completed in 1889, and the Statue of Liberty, which was 1886. So both of those fall in lines. It could be either of those dates. So definitely late 19th century, 1800s.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Yeah, and I think that's a good nail in the coffin on this theory. Here's my bottom line here. House of Mouse, hello. Disneyland, hello. All the Disney worlds are connected, but it doesn't have to go that deep. I mean, I guess this is fun. It's like a fun fan theory, but I just don't think it has any credibility besides something that Chris Buck might have jokingly hinted at.
You know, he knew that he was totally trolling the Disney fans.
Oh, of course. That's what I thought it was so funny.
And then this guy writes like a 5-page blog post on it. Poor fans. I'm totally unconvinced that Anna and Elsa's parents are Tarzan's parents, but you know, whatever. If there's more evidence to the contrary of what I believe, then I'd be glad to look at it. It'd be interesting to see.
Mm-hmm.
Disney and Pixar definitely are, like, they definitely get these like crazy nerdy fan bases. Like, I noticed that, like
us.
Yeah.
Well, no, like the crazy fans. I'm sorry, I don't say crazy in a negative way, but the fans who develop all these fan theories and stuff that everything's connected. You know, Cloud Atlas, Donnie Darko. But anyway, I guess it doesn't happen with DreamWorks fans, because like they don't try to connect all their movies. Like they do. There's a few things here and there, but I don't know. I think it's just a different structure in studio. If they had switched it around and DreamWorks made DreamWorks World, you know, in the early mid-1900s, then it would be totally different. You get to see all your favorite characters in one land.
What would the story be if all of DreamWorks World was connected?
Oh, that would take years.
Chelsea, that takes too much brain power to just come up on the spot on a podcast.
Know.
You know better than
I
this.
I know.
You know better.
It's true. I just think it was really funny because I remember the time period when this was released, when all of this was going on. It was just like, seriously, on Twitter, everybody was just like, oh yeah, and then this would happen. Oh yeah, and then this would happen.
And the non-Disney fans started getting in on the action. And,
right.
Like, you'd see just like on your mom would like post this on Facebook and you're like, what? It became a big deal.
It was great fun.
Awesome. There's also the Lion King theory. I'm gonna visit this guy's site. I feel bad giving him my well-earned clicks, but I'm interested. I'll take a look.
All
at
right, you report back for the next Nerdy Couch discussion. We'll discover. You come and bring us more plausible theories, and we will refute them.
Oh, okay.
100%.
Okay, I like that.
We will shoot you down.
So what? I'll be like coming in with the morning conspiracy theory report. Fire away. Well, the word on the internet. The giraffes are in a bit of a spot. You don't say. Anyway, all right. That was an entertaining theory. It got me thinking. Got the wheels turning. Since I looked at that loony old man.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
All right. And I have no friends, so for me it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Just keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Bravo Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Bravo Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Bravo Bros.
Good job.
All right, folks, you have made it through our awesome Nerdy Couch discussion. Now we're here to the main event. And as you know, we are reviewing Walt Disney's Tarzan.
Was it alone?
Yes.
Are you sure?
There are no others.
I said he could stay. That doesn't make him my son.
And this is actually a request by yours truly, because my birthday is coming up, and I kicked and screamed and whined and threw a fit until Morgan and Chelsea let us review Tarzan, because this is like my birthday this is like my birthday episode. It's my birthday gift to me. I'm so happy. So yes, by the time you listen to this, it'll most likely be around the 9th of July, which is my birthday. And so to treat myself, I thought we would review Tarzan, which I've been clamoring about for this whole year. I've been wanting to review this, and so I'm glad I got my wish.
We are too.
Happy
Trust me,
birthday.
We are too.
Thank you, Morgan.
I'm the resident snark on the show. Come on.
Hey, bring on the snark.
Okay, so I'm really excited to do this movie. I hadn't seen it in a long time, but I always enjoyed it growing up. You know, by the time this came out, I was probably 13 years old and still, you know, diehard about Disney. But watching it again, I had so much more appreciation for the art form and technology in this movie than I think when I was younger. And so watching it, I was really impressed by how good of a movie this was.
Yeah, I mean, it really doesn't have a lot of any plot holes or anything like that. I mean, there are some that we'll get into, but like, all in all, I mean, it's pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed it. You know, some people compare it to like Atlantis or Treasure Planet just because of the tech and you know, the style, the storytelling style. But I really think it stands alone as like a more like a semi-dark, mature, but very like dramatic adventure film that Disney came out with that somehow separates itself from Atlantis and Treasure Planet.
Yeah, this movie is considered to be the last of the Disney Renaissance films, and I definitely agree. This movie's very strong, maybe even stronger than a few of the movies before, but I do think that all the movies in the late 90s were really, really good, but this is definitely, you know, one of the top in my book. So let's go into some general info about the movie. So it was released June 18th, 1999. It gained $448 million worldwide. And by gained, I mean earned. Budget was $130 million. And the directors were Chris Buck, who we know from Frozen and Surf's Up. You can go to rotoscopers.com/55 to listen to our Frozen episode, and rotoscopers.com/4 to listen to our Surf's Up episode. And the co-director was Kevin Lima. He directed a Goofy movie and Enchanted, and he's soon to be directing Mumbai Musical for DreamWorks.
That's a powerful couple right there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm just sitting here, I'm looking at these names, and, you know, as you're younger, maybe you don't pay as much attention to the directors, but now we definitely, you know, the directors are the stars almost. And I look at these two names and see what they've done and their pedigree, and I'm just like, well, no wonder this movie's so good. It has an incredible directing duo.
I mean, anybody who can come up with a Goofy movie has a huge upswing in my book.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So this movie was also well well received by audiences and critics alike. It holds an 88% score on Rotten Tomatoes and did very, very well for itself at the time. And another notable thing to me when I think of this movie is the soundtrack. I think this is one of the Disney soundtracks that sort of stands alone and is very playable on its own. And then just was so unique for the time that, I can't think of Tarzan without thinking of the Phil Collins soundtrack.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. Well, Phil Collins, for all his cheesiness, he sure delivers an awesome soundtrack, like so powerful, so much energy. And he did other Disney movies, right?
Yeah, he worked on...
Did they put him on Brother Bear?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of weird because this new sort of song inclusion that they had worked very well for Tarzan, where majority of the characters aren't singing, but it's kind of an artist who is singing and carrying the emotional tone of the film. And then they try, and it worked really well. And then they tried to just recreate it with Brother Bear. And to me, Brother Bear, it just fell flat. It was trite. By this point, the Phil Collins, you know, Disney score had been done. I just didn't see the point of having him do it again.
What? Brother Bear had that one song. What was it? Somewhere some bear is calling for you. Two bears, one family. Trust your bear. Let the bear decide. Is that one right?
Oh, I totally remember that one. Yeah.
That's like the best song on the soundtrack.
Exactly.
I've been waiting to do that one for years.
Oh, gosh. But yeah, to me, it just didn't work. I mean, the fact that it was the exact same voice and the same style. It made Brother Bear fall very short, and it didn't feel unique in any way. But here in Tarzan, it's great. I thought it was a nice change and shift of pace.
Why do you think it worked for Tarzan, but it didn't work for Spirit?
Because Spirit was copying Tarzan. Tarzan did it first, and you know it was very successful. I think this album was very successful for the time, and so I think others sort of saw that and were like, "We got to get on this."
Like long before there was "Let It Go," this entire movie soundtrack was on the radio. Not on the Disney radio channel, but on not on Radio Disney, but on normal pop radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember watching Disney Channel. They all have all these spots and they have on TV about Phil Collins. You know him doing a soundtrack, and it's one of my favorite Disney soundtracks.
I remember I actually had this soundtrack as well. And the thing is, they thought that Phil Collins was such an essential part of the movie experience that they actually got him to do even all of the, not all of them, but a lot of the different languages that it was produced in, which is unheard of to be able to get the same singer to sing in all of those different languages, mostly because it's so difficult to get the accent right and to get everything right so you don't just sound like you don't sound dumb seeing somebody else's language. So I do have a question for all of our international crowd, because we've got a lot of you out there. I want to know if Phil Collins sang this in your language, I want to know how he did, because I mean, we can't really judge because we're not native. So we want to know.
I would like to hear the Mandarin Chinese version of Phil Collins singing the Tarzan soundtrack.
That would be one interesting soundtrack.
You know, I think even though this is my guess of what people are going to say, but because he is such a well-known recording artist, he was a really, really, really big deal. I think they needed his unique voice. It wouldn't have made sense to have other people sing his songs because they were Phil Collins songs. And I think even though maybe he won't have the accent perfectly perfect, I think people will still forgive him for it because one, he tried, and two, it's Phil Collins. Like, we got Phil Collins in our movie. We didn't get just someone else to do this dub.
Well, yeah, and I don't doubt that they all accepted it and were like, hey, thanks. You know, definitely appreciated that for sure. For example, if, you know, we have somebody who comes and tries to sing in English, it's like, oh, that's nice. Thanks. But I just want to know how he did.
Mm-hmm. Good to know.
Yeah, totally. All right, so we've got two worlds, which echoes throughout the movie, part of the intro, really cool. And then "You'll Be in My Heart," and then Kara, who voiced by Glenn Close, she sings part of that. And then there's Son of Man, Trash in the Camp, featuring with Rosie O'Donnell. And was it really in sync?
Yes.
Yeah, the credits. The credit scene.
Oh, the credit scene. Okay, okay. And then Strangers Like Me, which is a really good one, too. You know, Trash in the Camp is probably my least favorite one because it seems to be the least Phil Collins-y and the most Rosie O'Donnell-y of the movie. But that's just about it. Just five tracks, right?
And Strangers Like Me. Did you already say
I think there's some reprises or however you pronounce that that word, where they kind of go back to it, you know?
I don't know. It's funny because when I'm looking and trying to think, distinguish these songs, like they're all different, but they're all the same.
Yeah.
You know, they all have the same sort of beat and tune and, you know, they have different melodies, obviously, and different lyrics. But to me, like all these songs feel, except for Trash in the Camp, very cohesive. They're very similar. Yet at the same time, I think that's a good thing. Like whenever I hear each one of these songs play, I get really excited and I hum along and I sing and like I totally get into it. But it's just really interesting that, you know, other soundtracks, they have very distinct styles. You know, Beauty and the Beast, you have Belle, the first song where she's singing through the town, and then you have Be Our Guest, and then you have the Mob song. Like they're all very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, these are very cohesive. Yeah. So that being said, what is your favorite song from the soundtrack? Can you choose?
Oh man, that's a hard one.
I can choose pretty easily. I really like Strangers Like Me. Mostly, okay. I think I felt like it had a really, just the whole feeling of it. He did a really good job at conveying the emotion of hope. Not just hope, but like excitement for longing for something more. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Tarzan's like, flipping your fins, you don't get to. Oh, never mind. But yeah, I totally know what you mean.
You feel the same excitement that he feels.
Yeah, totally. Well, I'm torn between Two Worlds and Son of Man. I'm leaning towards Son of Man right now. Probably because of that, at the very last part, you know?
Yeah.
Plus, it's one of my favorite parts of the movies, and so, of the film, and so that's probably nudging it towards that side.
Nice. Yeah, I can't choose. I like Two Worlds, You'll Be in My Heart's awesome, Son of Man, Strangers Like Me, so I'm no help here. But anyone who maybe doesn't own the soundtrack but you want to, we'll include a link below for you can buy it on Amazon or iTunes because it's really good. It deserves some downloads.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of Two Worlds, how about that intro sequence, people? Starts out with drama, fire and explosion. I really like the pacing and like the energy of this intro sequence. Like it's very adventuresome, you know, and it introduces the two worlds, you know, and how Kara is drawn, inexplicably drawn to the baby's crying when no one else apparently hears it.
Yeah. From miles away.
her Tarzan sense is tingling. Okay. Maybe this is the first time I really realized this, but dead parents on the floor with bloody sabor tracks. Gives me the shivers, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Right away, you can tell this is not a mamby-pamby, cotton-headed Ninny Muggins film. You know, there's some serious issues we got to deal with here. Like Sabor.
Like Sabor.
Sabor is a savage beast.
Double homicide.
Double homicide.
Tried to be before.
Triple homicide, huh? So, I really like this intro. It's like you said, it's adventurous, it's fun, it's intense, and it paces very well. There's quite a bit of there's quite a bit of time that passes from the very beginning to when the parents actually die and Kala comes in. And then you start caring for the characters and you really are invested in what's happening. To me, it's probably one of the best animated openings that I've seen. You know, obviously when you think of best animated openings, you think of, you know, the Married Life sequence and Up, which isn't the opening, but it kind of is. But I think this comes really close because it's just so intense and it makes you immediately care for the characters.
I'm not going to lie. A couple of my favorite parts of the movie here, is where she gets her first look at Tarzan and she's like, huh? He's like, eh? Like my favorite part.
I still remember in the theaters, everyone laughing about that part.
Oh, it's cute. Looking at baby Tarzan, I'm like, whoa, you know, it's very hard to animate babies, let alone draw them. I would know. I've tried. And,
we leave it to the Glenn Keens of the world.
Hey, that's why we do. props to the animation squad for this film for all their awesome, awesome work. And we'll get into that later. And also, I'm not going to lie. When I saw Kara playing with Tarzan, I saw Sabor's tail dangling behind her. I was like, it's Tigger. and cue my Jim Cummings moment of the episode. I'll spare
you
all.
It's not a Rotoscopers episode until, you know, Jim Cummings gets mentioned.
That's right. I'm just hinting because I really want him to be on the show someday.
Someday.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
5-1-0, declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
We are the real Brady Bros. Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg, and who were you again?
I played Peter.
We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
But I love her little conflict with Sabor and just kind of quirky escape that she makes with him. The whole diaper thing. And
They do a really good job of bringing humor into it when it should be a very scary time.
That's a quality adventure movie. And then she brings him to Kerchak, who is the man. I have mucho respect for Kerchak. You know, the iconic. Do you remember the trailer? How like ominous it was? Was he alone? Are you sure? Yes, there were no others. Then he can stay. That doesn't make him my son. What is he? He's also Batman. He can stay in the Batcave, but that doesn't make him my son. You're a psychopath. Kerchak is awesome, but man, that trailer I loved it when I was a kid. It was so ominous and dark.
You know, I don't remember the trailer, but I do remember like a teaser thing that they did to that, like, I guess because Glenn Keane, his son or somebody close to him was a skateboarder. And so they had this girl talking it up like at the skate park, and you have like, oh yeah, we're here, you know, talking about Disney's next big movie. It's going to be Tarzan as he, you know, looks at all these skater people, and it was really weird, but at the same time, for whatever reason, it was exciting. Like, ooh, that's cool.
Well, we all know how big Tony Hawk and some of the skateboarders of the time were, especially during that period. So it was definitely on point with what was hot in society, pop culture.
Sorry, I was reading another one of these dumb theories.
Don't read those theories.
Sorry, I'm addicted. Mufasa may have caused the drought.
They're going to turn you apostate. Turn away.
Oh, you're so right. All right. So once again, I got to hand it to the animation team for this film because it's so challenging. How challenging must it have been, one, to animate gorillas realistically and convincingly, but then you get them to speak English and sing in some parts. It's crazy. Then how do you animate a missing link, you know, wild man in a loincloth, to interact with them? And so it just blows me away, the quality of their animation.
Oh, so good.
Did anyone notice that some of the characters seem to have like a sketchy look to them? But at the same time, the majority of the characters are very smooth and, you know, the colors are great and the shadows, but like Kerchak, like his nose just seemed really sketchy to me. And then I was looking at other characters, sometimes when they had like very deep folds, they were more of like a sketched outline rather than just like a hard line, which I thought was interesting. I never paid attention to that before.
Maybe that was just hair or fur. But yeah, I'll have to go back and look at it. You know, Disney Screen Caps has the Blu-ray stills from this movie, which is really exciting.
Ooh, yes.
Nice.
I do love the fantastic animation of the flowers opening, you know, when it's like, you know, transition to boyhood, you know, from baby to boy, you know, the flowers kind of open. That's a cool animation. It's very delicate. And then we get introduced to, oh gosh, what's the annoying gorilla's name?
Turk.
Oh, yeah. We get introduced to, I liked toddler Turk more than Child Turk, you know, later on.
It's true.
Turk
feels
also
a lot more innocent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Also, does Turk age between the 20 years that Tarzan aged?
She ages, but her voice does not.
Okay.
Kind of does.
All right, Morgan. I'm sensing a tone. How do you feel about Turk?
I hate Turk.
Okay. What?
Turk is the worst. Okay, so Turk is super pointless. Turk and Tantor. I think Tantor, they're both like cute.
I think Tantor is more pointless than Turk.
Well, yes. Okay, that I'll agree with you there. Turk kind of has some, she lightens the mood a little bit, but really if you took her out of the movie, both of them, the movie would be the same.
It's
There's
true.
No purpose for these characters other than to just like make the little kiddos happy. But I feel like they wouldn't have had these characters. It could have made this movie a lot stronger, more like Hunchback of Notre Dame. Hunchback of Notre Dame had like one or two like goofy characters, but they didn't have their own scene trashing the camp, basically.
Yeah.
But here, these characters just don't serve a purpose. Like they literally have nothing to do with the plot except for the very end, you know, when they bring, you know, help, you know, but there could have been other ways around that. But it's, ugh, no. I
no.
Watching this, I really liked this movie. And then every time I saw them, I was like, ugh. I think just having Turk would have been okay if she wasn't so goofy off the wall, if she just would have like only stayed with the gorillas. But
see,
yeah.
I really liked Tantor as a, like a kid. I mean, well, maybe it's just the one quote. Are you sure this water's sanitary? It looks questionable to me. I mean, that was hilarious. I'll be honest. That was hilarious. But like, as I get older, it was like, yeah, we don't really need this.
Side note, I like how Tantor's mom is the diner lady from Emperor's New Groove. I think she's been in a couple of Disney films.
Yeah.
Mazel tov.
Well, and also, I'm pretty positive I heard Max a la Goofy Movie in there. And then I went and looked it up and I'm like, yep, there he is. That guy from that show, James Marsden. Is that what his name is? But he's in everything.
And we always have a debate whether it's James or Jason.
I know.
All right. Here's how I feel about Turk. I think Turk is slightly necessary because, Tarzan himself is, not a dynamic character. He is, humble. He's determined. He's, passionate. He's serious.
Turk?
No, Tarzan.
Oh, I was
and
like...
Turk is a foil to Tarzan. And to me, Turk is a necessary foil to Tarzan to give him sort of a counterpart, like a counter perspective on things. And also to introduce the theme of Tarzan being the hairless wonder, you know, the outcast at the beginning. And just to kind of make it a thing where Tarzan at least at first doesn't have any friends, and then his bravery and ingenuity, allows him to gain the respect of his troop. And so I think she's slightly, necessary, but you're right. She doesn't really do anything. You know, Timon, I see her as kind of, no offense to Lion King fans, but I see her as kind of the Timon of this film, in that she's a wisecracker and she's sarcastic. Totally the opposite of the attitude of the main protagonist. But Turk doesn't really save the day in the end. It was Tantor. You know,
yeah.
And Turk is totally ready to turn her back on Tarzan at the, during the second act, although she did it reluctantly,
well,
out of pride.
They tried to make her rounded out a little bit more as far as like coming to embrace her more sensitive side and actually be like somebody who can love and say, yes, I do love you, or yes, I'll miss you type thing. Yeah, I really don't know if it hit well. I mean, it was okay. I didn't have anything against it, honestly, but it was just like, I can see what they were trying to do. Probably didn't pan out quite as well as they had hoped, but...
Other than, you know, that, the movie is so good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I thought Rosie O'Donnell's only decent role was Turk, besides what she did in Harriet the Spy. Anyway. But I do love that quote, though. Tell me, I'm not looking at the hairless wonder. And Morgan's right. The rest of the film is gold. Like, I love the sequence where he dives into the elephant herd. That water looks so crystal clear.
Yeah, that was pretty.
It's a piranha! Tantor is a little adorable, but he gets very pathetic after the 20 years go by. Here's a fan theory. Here's a fan theory I want to look into. What happened to him? You notice how his parents totally leave him behind during their stampede, and we never see them again?
Well, at the very end, Tarzan comes back with a herd of elephants.
He's like, it's been 20 years. You are done freeloading. You are the worst roommate ever. Here's your family. Go deal with them. Like, well, did he just, like, stick around for 2 decades? Was it, like, Sid the Sloth, where his family just thought he was so annoying that they just abandoned him?
I think he was just one of those kids that never was at home and just was always off playing with his friends, but then every once in a while
there's something
home.
More sinister going on. Oh, well, it's the law of the jungle. If the jungle wants him, he can have him. And like I said, I just love this sequence. Like, look at the cinematography. Like, look at the sweet angles and backgrounds, and how beautiful the watering hole environment is.
Yeah, well, and just it was really cool. I watched this with a group of my friends up here, and we were just kind of admiring the fact that, you know, there was parts where you're like, oh yeah, that's totally 2D, but then over here you can tell when they do throw in the deep canvas, which is that different art technique that they developed for this movie, and kind of see the difference where it just kind of they didn't blend quite as well as they probably should have, but it was still so cool, especially as he's going through all the vines and flying through the air. That was pretty sweet. I want to fly through the air.
Yeah, totally. And that's part of my favorite sequence, which is the Son of Man montage. Everybody loves a good montage.
Oh my gosh.
I love to see a hero's journey. Like, I love to see a hero's, like, rise from nothing. You know, Tarzan should hang out with Hercules more. Both went from zero to hero in their respective social groups.
So did Simba.
Oh, Simba. Yeah, he was an outcast, but people would have accepted him if he hadn't run away.
That's true.
I don't know. We'd have to hear a theory on that. What would have happened if Simba had stayed?
If Simba had stayed, he would have just been like, I don't know. He probably would have just, like, stayed in the corner for, like, a couple months. But then again, Mom would be like, no, honey, it wasn't your fault, it's okay. And
honey, Mommy is losing her patience.
Yeah, I think it would have ended up something like that. So he definitely wouldn't have had nearly the amount of emotional baggage that he had by running away. Lesson to learn, kids, don't run away from home.
Yeah, I totally agree. All right, and this brings us to adult Tarzan. This is like his Ocarina of Time, you know, older now scene. I find him to be like a relatively static character compared to everyone else. So I think a lot of people are in this film. Mm-hmm. But I still think Tarzan is the man. I mean, I really look up to him. I mean, hello, he has huge thighs. I have huge thighs. It totally works out. Actually, when I went to Epcot Center, last summer, I went to the animation pavilion, and they had this cool thing where you like took a selfie on this kiosk thing, and then they send back a drawing of a Disney character that looks like how you posed.
Oh, really?
You also take a personality test and determines what Disney character you are. So I got Tarzan, of course. And so I was like super thrilled about that, because that is good. That's a good thing to aspire to, I think.
Honestly, I think his personality was kind of weird. I mean, he was raised by apes.
Very true. No regard for personal boundaries.
Do you really want to aspire to that?
Yes. I'd love to run around with just a loincloth.
Oh,
the
fantastic.
Summers in Texas? Yeah, pardon my French, but I get fried.
Oh, man.
Anyway, so tree skating is another cool thing. One, you got to have tough feet to be like Tarzan.
Yeah.
My gosh. Either that or those trees are very moist and slippery. He oils the trees. You know, he like puts wax on them like skaters put on grind rails.
Nice.
You know? Tarzan, eat your dinner. Not now, Mom. I'm greasing the jungle.
It takes me 5 days to prepare for one scene.
5 days. Deep canvas, though. That is the name of the game for that sequence. First of all, it's phenomenal. I love the leap forward at the end, and then he looks back at you. Oh, Tarzan. You know, they should have just, you know how they have the title card Tarzan at the beginning, and then they do it at the end, like on Lion King? They should have just kept doing it. Like, after every awesome moment, after every awesome scene ending in Tarzan, they should have just, boom, Tarzan. They should have just kept doing it. It would have been awesome.
Oh, man. When we do a parody video, that's what we're going to do.
I need to do a parody video. Tarzan Uncut and Unleashed.
Whoosh.
Yeah. whoosh. But yeah, deep canvas, folks. So if you Google deep canvas technique, you'll find some blog posts that are, in my opinion, aren't very well written, and they'll try to explain it. But this is what I've got in a nutshell. I'm trying to wrap my head around this. So basically, artists came in and they painted a scene using 3D models of trees, vines, etc., as their guide. And so they kind of painted the texture onto the models itself. But what the software did was it translated their brushstrokes into 3D brushstrokes, you know, taking down things such as brush spacing and pressure. And it translated that into a 3D object using the 3D model as a guide for how the mesh, as it were, would morph into 3D space. And so you animate a 2D character on top of that, and then you have to have them interacting, you know, weaving in and out of the trees and shadows. And, you do all that in post. But what it really was this, like, crazy technique software where you paint something and the software translates it into a 3D object, or at least the 3D texture for it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? That's what I got out of it.
That's what I figured as well. I mean, we have different videos that we'll definitely put in the show notes as well, as far as the deep canvas goes. And from the ones that I saw, it was kind of that way. Like, what they did is they designed the world 3D, and then they put him in it. And then on top, well, not just that, but they drew him 24 frames per second into this free 3D world, which yeah. turned out pretty awesome. And then on top of that, they paint it. And mm-hmm. with the little stylus thing that they have. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty awesome. The 3D objects kind of knew their shape and so they've kind of wrapped it around itself, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. And besides deep canvas, I did notice a lot, like, especially in the scene where Kara first discovers baby Tarzan, that they do have several 3D objects that they applied this technique to, and it gave everything a very painterly look. And I noticed that a lot of animation students at a lot of studios strive for that look, like that tangled look where everything looks like it's the painting, or you can really get those brush strokes. I'm actually working on a short film right now, animated, where we're trying to go for that texture quality where things look like they're painted. And I like it. There are parts of this film that are very refined, like the line work and the draftsmanship on the drawings of the animations.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like that kind of rough painterly look. And it zooms by so fast in these tree surfing sequences.
Yeah.
It's still really cool.
Well, it's really cool. I've seen different artists, and this is not just in movies, but in just paintings and art itself. I have a cousin who, she's an artist, and she'll try and get things to look as real as possible via paint. And then you have, like, my sister-in-law, who's an artist, but she'll take pictures and then make them look like paintings. And so I think we're all trying to, both sides of the scope, they're trying to find that perfect meld of real, but still fantasy, to the point where it's not, because if it's not totally real, then the human eye knows it, and the human eye doesn't want to accept it. They like totally like, no, that's false. That's,
mm-hmm.
But if it's made to look kind of somewhere in between, the human eye likes it. It's like, ooh, something a part of my dreams almost, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay, so I guess the bottom line is it's convincing if not realistic.
Yeah.
Cool. So Son of Man ends. Awesome montage, awesome song. And then we're kind of into the second act. I think I like to kind of chop movies into like two movies, you know, if it could. I think the ending of the first part of Tarzan is coming up with the showdown with Sabor.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I do like the gag with him trying to sneak up on Kara, and Kara's like, don't even think about it. How'd you know it was me? I'm your mother. I know everything.
It's true.
So everyone has learned to live with Tarzan.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I don't understand is, like, after 20 years, Kerchak still has
just
a beef
about
with Tarzan. I mean, yeah, we don't know how long it is, okay, people. But, I mean, it's long enough that he's a grown man. And, like, Kerchak still has a beef with this guy. Like, what?
Kerchak can't just can't trust what he can't explain.
But it's been so long. You might have well as, I don't know.
Oh, man.
I'm like, ah.
Kerchak is one hard gorilla.
Well, but yeah, here's my other thing is, like, when it comes to Sabor, is that supposed to be the same Sabor that killed his parents 20 years beforehand?
Oh, how long do leopards live? Pixar theory guy needs to pick up on this.
Yeah, right? So this is my question. Okay, if it's supposed to be, quote-unquote, the same Sabor, I really don't think it's that impressive that Tarzan killed him because that guy...
Oh, because he's a bit long in the teeth by then.
He's coming up on the end anyway.
All right. I'll take that. I personally like the idea of Tarzan having a showdown with the guy who killed his parents, even though he doesn't know it.
Right.
You know, he's just trying to protect Kerchak and the troop. But I do like it. It's kind of like, you know, Luke Skywalker blowing up the Death Star, you know, sticking it to the Empire that killed his family, you know. Okay, you know what's freaky? If you're watching Tarzan, jump to about 26 minutes in and about 32 seconds after that. When, Turk and Tantor are like BSing or whatever and carrying on, and Tarzan is distracted because he's staring into the jungle and he feels that something is wrong. It's a good 10 seconds before Sabor jumps out and attacks. You can see Sabor hidden in the background the whole time.
Yeah, that was
like
a cool
when
shot.
It zooms in, he's literally painted into the background. It totally fools you until I had to pause it and been like, oh, there he is. Like, he's totally there.
Yeah.
But Tarzan doesn't know it, and most viewers won't realize it when they first see it. Very cool touch. And then when Sabor just tears out of there and starts fighting Tarzan, gosh, Sabor is a scary character.
Yeah.
They really did a good job on making like a savage, like, killing machine. Like, that thing has no personality. I'm also glad that Sabor didn't talk.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get those crazy Tarzan!
Oh my gosh, can you imagine if they're like having this
oh my
discussion?
Gosh. Could Tigger have been descended from Sabor? I'm just kidding, he's a leopard, more like Shere Khan.
Yeah, there you go.
We're all about Pixar. We're all about Disney theories today.
Oh, look what I started.
I love the fight. They both fall in the pit, but Sabor's hide comes out first, and then it's actually Tarzan, you know?
Yeah. That was pretty awesome.
Also, like Kerchak's face, he's like, "What? I don't even give that guy the time of day." You know, I think it's ironic that the elephants find it so hard to accept Tarzan. You know, when many people in this world will argue that they share a common ancestor, but they don't have a problem with Tantor running around with them, a giant clumsy elephant. You know, they're just fine with that. Maybe they accepted Tantor after Tarzan got him to blow up the termite mounds. That way they could eat all the termites. Stubborn gorillas, they wanted termites that day, and they didn't want to go to other food sources, so Tarzan had to go save them from starvation.
Well, they can use him. So that's all the gorillas want, is somebody that can be of use.
Man, gorillas, man, that's tough. Tough old society they got set up there.
Yeah. Mm.
It's the law of the jungle.
Yeah, so here's a fun fact. You know the part where he comes out and Tarzan starts doing his Tarzan yell?
His mighty yodel of destiny.
Exactly. I actually learned how to yodel in imitating Tarzan. Pretty impressive stuff.
Thank you, Tarzan.
I know. It's like started me on a whole fantastic trek. No, if you haven't watched it yet, we have on the Rotoscopers YouTube a video of me teaching you how to yodel. I didn't mention the Tarzan fact in there. That is just for those people who are listening to the podcast.
Oh,
but
extra.
You guys can go on there and check it out. I find it incredibly amusing to listen to it. I just think it's funny. Anyway, yodeling is interesting. People love it for whatever reason. They do.
Little old lady who. That's what Tarzan's yell should have been. Instead of like, it should have been like, little old lady, little lady, little lady, little lady. He should have been more Scandinavian.
There you go.
Tarzan should have been like,
no!
Oh.
He learned how to yodel while listening to his parents who were actually from Frozen.
It's all connected!
Well, wait, no, that's more Swiss, but still.
Ricola. That's what Tarzan should have done. Not quite yodeling, but you know.
Oh my gosh.
After that, before Kerchak can even say anything to Tarzan, we hear the Clayton. And Tarzan's world is totally about to change. Strange things are happening to me. And we get introduced to Jane Polta.
I really like Jane.
Jane's one of my favorites. My gosh.
I don't know how well I really liked the animation of her. I felt like it was very simple. Like, compared to Tarzan, Tarzan's features were very strong and very just harsh. Not harsh, yeah. But just, he had very strong features. Jane is like a little line there signifying her nose. A little thing here. You know, it's just very, yeah. Almost flat, I felt like. I didn't know how much I liked it, but I liked her.
Yeah, definitely more delicate. And she probably stands out because she's like the only woman in the film.
Right.
This is a man's movie. hoo-ha, football, yeah, World Cup. But so here's that. You want to hear some scandalous stuff about Jane Porter?
Yes.
Okay, did you know that at one time she was actually a Disney princess? She was an official Disney princess.
How is she not official now?
Okay, I'll explain. First of all, side note, did you know the next most popular Google image search for Jane Porter is Disney Jane Porter barefoot?
Classy.
I do not understand people on the internet. Yeah, if you, I did a little digging on the Disney Wikia. You can clearly see Jane Porter's announcement as a Disney princess officially on the cover of the November 1999 issue of Disney Princess Magazine. She's right there on the cover.
There was a Disney Princess Magazine?
Yes, there was a Disney Princess Magazine.
How did I miss that?
I don't know. Somehow they got rid of the funding for that so that they could ruin the images with new art on the website.
Nice.
I'm going on Brenda Chapman on this one. I'm calling a Brenda Chapman on this. She was, but the weird thing is they did that. And then she was mentioned one more time, supposedly in early 2000, but then she virtually vanished from the Disney Princess franchise. Like, not that I care about this that much, but I just think it's interesting for our Disney Princess fans. We do. We scare because we care. You know, much like Esmeralda did, although I can totally understand why Esmeralda was once a Disney princess, but then was not.
Yeah, I can see that too.
Not much of a moral character, but a moral example. Now, possible reasons for her removal from the Disney princess pantheon. Haven't used that one in a while. Is that her wardrobe, her dress could be confused with that of Belle, although that has given rise to another Disney theory that she is descended from Belle.
Yeah, that's why she has, you know, Mrs. Teapot in the chip.
She's not an actual princess, though it could be argued that she is a queen being married to Tarzan, who is the king of the jungle. She also does not sing, and I'm glad she didn't. I don't imagine Jane as having a good singing voice. I imagine her more of like Nicole Kidman's character in Australia. Which is an excellent film.
Hey, I loved her in Moulin Rouge.
Yeah, she is not much of a singer in Australia. Same director, though, I think, or producer.
I think so.
Yeah. So, I do find Jane Porter adorable, but I don't think that she should have been a Disney princess in the first place, but I think they were still kind of like feeling out that franchise. But yeah, for those of us hardcore Disney princess fans, she was in the 99 issue as the newest Disney princess.
Interesting.
But through some scandalous, dubious deeds, she was cut out of it.
I'm trying to think.
It's only a matter of time before Mulan is erased from the Disney princess pantheon.
No, because the movie Mulan is about her. I think it's just because the movie Tarzan was not about Jane. Jane was just happened to be there. And so I don't, like, but that takes away from the whole, like, why Jasmine is still in there, because it's not about Jasmine, it's about Aladdin. So I don't understand why they would do her the disservice of taking away her title.
I also like Jane because she is very educated, which I can see the similarity to Belle. She's definitely very bookish, and she is a naturalist like her father. Family groups!
Daddy, I love
all the scenes where where Tarzan's doing something monkey-like, and then Mr. Porter thinks it's fascinating, so he wants to imitate him and participate, so he gets down and does something monkey-like, and then Jane follows with that, because she's a naturalist, and then Clayton, who just wants to shoot the monkey, is just like, oh my gosh, how did I get on this contract with these people? Yeah, I do love the scene of Tarzan saving Jane from the baboons.
Yeah, that was really great.
And Daddy, he took my boot.
That's the best quote of the movie, honestly, or at least of hers. But
that whole monologue of her. Of her,
and I was flying, and he was, and then a wild man.
I was saved by a flying wild man in a loincloth.
Loincloth.
Like,
oh my dear.
she been hitting my stash of liquor? The whole sequence of the baboons is thrilling, but geez, like, two minutes into it, it just keeps going on and on. The baboons really want to kill Jane. And I bet Tarzan was thinking, like, oh my gosh, is this girl really worth all this?
Yeah.
These baboons are a huge problem. I just sprained my groin trying to...
Is
this really worth it? No reward is worth this. Little Han Solo moment. I love how Jane totally goes the Fay Wray route, you know, very King Kong, like, you know, Fay Wray, there's virtually a 5-minute sequence where all Fay Wray does is scream at the top of her lungs for like 5 straight minutes. And so Jane is very Fay Wray on that. And then they get away from the baboons and it's kind of awkward, you know. Tarzan is used to ape taboo. You know, he doesn't understand British sensibilities.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
I mean, they go around and they groom each other. This is very not okay in high society. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, how high society do you think Jane was? High enough that
Do I think she is? I think it's irrelevant because her point is to be a proper, sensible British, stereotypical girl. You know?
Yeah, but she still had enough money to get there.
Yeah. Well, she's not afraid to, you know, ditch the dress garb. Yeah, she is in a dress and then she learns to kind of like let loose and, you know, she kind of relaxes during the film. So I don't know. It would be interesting to hear the backstory. Her father is definitely educated because he's a naturalist.
Yeah.
Well, and they're both researchers.
Whoa!
Hey! Welcome back.
Thank you. Sorry.
Morgan's like the sniper of this episode. She just waits.
Wait,
what did we talk about with the whole Steve Hickner thing? Or do you want to be a frog or a snake? You should be both.
Yeah. Jump at opportunity and then I strangle it to death.
Oh, man.
Yikes. Yeah.
So she says that she has never met the queen, but she thinks that she's a very nice, you know, she assumes that she's a very nice lady. I imagine that she's more like middle to upper class, like she's very educated, like you were saying. She's also a researcher, so she's, you know, very much more educated than I imagine most people would be at this time. But I don't think she's an aristocrat in any means. I think if she would have been, she would have been more familiar with the queen, or at least have seen her at parties, maybe. Maybe not necessarily spoken to her, but she doesn't come off aristocratic in any way, shape, or form. She's kind of like a step below, maybe 2 steps below.
Yeah. Okay, well, that makes sense. Well, they did have the money to hire a ship to get out there.
Well, I don't know if it was they were hiring the ship or if the ship was making, like, had a bunch of destination or ports of call, and they paid passage. They paid passage for one of the ports.
What about port? I prefer rum. Making port. Guess the movie. Because I agree with your sentiment there, because the ship had a schedule. You know, if they had the money to pay the ship, they could just be like, I'll promise you 30% if we can stay for 2 more days, you know?
Yeah.
And that would make sense. Okay, that helps with that speculation. Very fun sequence where Tarzan is, you know, inspecting Jane, you know, getting to know her for the first time.
I'm Jane.
No.
Oh, that whole scene is awesome. I'm Jane.
I think I remember when we first met Morgan, I think that was one of the first quotes we laughed about or something like that. No. I'm Jane.
No. I'm Morgan.
Yeah.
That's basically how it went.
I was like, Disney fan girl? But anyway, thank you, Tarzan writers, for giving us something a little more plausible than Tarzan and Jane automatically understanding ape and English and vice versa. Like, thank you for making time pass where they actually get over the language barrier and he learns English. Like, unlike Pocahontas, where everyone just randomly understands each other all of a sudden. You know.
See, this whole section of time reminds me of the Jungle Book, the live action version of like around the same time period.
Ooh.
I love that.
I need
that
to
movie.
Go back and see that one.
That one's such a good one.
I haven't
one.
Seen that one in a long time.
Talk about mature, man. People get killed by quicksand
That's
in that movie.
That's true. That one was cool. I love that movie. Anyway, but it's like the whole, it's the same thing. It's like, the monkey man must take us to find the treasure. So, you know, Clayton's the one wanting the monkey man to take him to his treasure, which happens to be.
Do you think? I know it's different parts of the world because Jungle Book is more India. or, you know, more like Asian jungle instead of African jungle. But do you think the bad guy from that remake, live action remake, could be related to? See, Morgan's got me. I'm totally ruined now because I'm reading on all these Pixar, all these Disney theories. Sorry.
Apostate. Put it away.
Unclean. Unclean.
It will move you away from the truth. It will deceive you.
From the proper, I'm a mudblood. It will deceive you.
Oh, man.
I love it. I love it too much. All right. I'll put that theory away. But yeah, thank you, writers, for actually realistically overcoming the language barrier. Although I love the gag with Clayton where he shoots his gun and then Tarzan's like, Clayton. And Clayton turns around and he's like, have we met? I love his British properness. You know, he has to be like, wait, do I know him? I don't want to be rude. I love it. I love it so much.
No, I'm talking about Pocahontas. I mean, I totally think it's plausible how they were able to understand. It was the colors of the wind. It was the magical leaves that just appear at perfect moments of time. And they made it possible for Pocahontas to understand him and vice versa, but also for Pocahontas' friend Nakoma to understand, and the animals.
Oh.
I mean, I'm telling you, it's the colors of the wind.
It's
every
key wind.
Point when they have a plot hole in that movie, introduce the leaves.
Don't you think, oh yeah, suddenly we solved all our problems. We can communicate like cooperative people. The wind made the translation possible. I love it.
So next we go to the trash in the camp scene, which is this necessary? Is it a waste of space?
It kind of for the kiddies, you know, to kind of release the tension.
Oh, I always sang the song.
Blow some steam.
It was a good song. Shoo-ba-doop, da-ba-doop, dude. It's very catchy.
I know, but it's more of like goofiness.
Shoo-boo. I think they could have done I mean no insults to the crew for this film, but I think they could have gotten a little more cohesive from the random sound effects to the rhythm. I don't think it was smooth enough a transition. It's just like, hey, rip, plate, oompa, you know,
I noticed that too.
Glass ding, and then and I was like, those gorillas are very advanced. They're like the elephant who can paint. And I think it distracts from the movie, but I think it's a welcome distraction because otherwise the film would just be very, very dark and very serious.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fun little interlude. It could be the intermission.
Hey, remember when they were doing it for McDonald's? They had that game where it's like if you could answer all the trivia questions for the Disney movie, it's like, oh, what was this movie? Oh, it was Song of the South, you know? Did you guys ever play that?
No, they did Song of the South. That's good.
Yeah, well, they had like the Disney trivia game where you pull it off the cups and then you would answer the question. And if you got the question right, then you would get like a free, chicken nugget or something. But
just one.
A free chicken nugget? I think you need to revise your story there, Chelsea.
Just one.
Here you go, child. Nice. Plops into your hand.
All right, here's your free nugget. Don't eat it all at once. But
but it was totally there. I'll have to find it and send it to you.
All right. So let's bring this back. That was a lovely tangent, by the way. Let's bring this back from trashing the camp, and then I can we talk about Clayton a little bit more? He's a relatively flat villain. He is funny in a few parts, but nowhere on the level of Scar, Ursula, and Jafar, you know, the triad of amazing Disney villains.
Well, his only motivation is basically, what, to make money?
Money. What else is there? That's true. It's hard to tell his intent. Well, you can tell early on in the film that he really wants to get those gorillas, but there's something sinister about his motivations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It could have been fleshed out better.
Yeah, like a little backstory.
He's sort of just like Radcliffe from Pocahontas, where it's, oh.
Where it all can be sold.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Hey, what if Radcliffe and Clayton were
brothers?
Distant relatives. Brothers. Yes, brothers is more plausible.
Okay, see, we are beginning to form our own, except for time era is totally off, but that's cool.
You know,
that's
we're ragging on these theories, but I have plenty of theories on the Rotoscopers podcast.
That's like all we do, people.
It's okay for us, but it's not okay for other people to come up with these theories.
Clayton rocks. I love his design. Big nose, yellow tinted eyes, mustache, obviously the bad guy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, in animation, it's always the giveaway who's the villain. If just look at the schnoz, the big nose, you know, it's him.
It is.
Yeah, look at the schnoz. I do like him as a villain. I think his death is perfectly suited for him. Have you ever noticed how his hair gets a little messed up when he's like not his normal self, when he's a little angry or disheveled, you know?
Cray cray.
When Tarzan's like messing with him and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Just shows how deep he is.
Okay, yeah. Here's something. Did you ever notice? He only reloaded like one time the entire movie.
Oh, I love Clayton's magical semi-auto, you know, high capacity clip, magazine, muzzle loading single shot elephant gun.
I don't understand.
He's right up there with McLeach, man. McLeach has a shotgun with a scope on it.
Yeah, right.
He really needs that scope because the shotgun is just too squirrely for him. Too precise for him. Jesus, the iron sights, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, sorry, Tarzan crew.
Oh, man. But this was one of the things that everybody in my little group of people that as we were watching this movie, they were all pointing out. They're like, nope, that's like 10 shots right there without reloading.
Yeah, I've learned to stop counting because it just drives you mad.
Yeah,
I think the creators had better, more important things on their mind, like developing deep canvas.
Oh, that's true. But I do love Clayton. He's got a few good quotes too.
Oh yeah, I love the one where he's like, if I can teach a parrot to sing God Save the Queen, then I can certainly teach this savage a thing or two.
I love it. And he calls them beasts.
Yes.
Yeah. And then so they set out to teach him a thing or two, while Clayton is like, where are the gorillas? Here's a scary picture of King Kong. I also love Jane's like very good technical drawing of Tarzan, and then Clayton attempts to draw a gorilla, and it's just like this like bear of fangs. It's all scary and juvenile. It gives away his personality there. And then we're into Strangers Like Me. I don't know why, but I was super touched when Tarzan gets to understand that there are planets and galaxies, and they take him out with a telescope. I thought that was really cool, you know?
That is cool. It didn't touch me like it did you, but you saying that it did made me happy.
Well, Tarzan, I agree. Tarzan deserves this kind of education. He's gifted because he's a human, Homo sapien, you know? he had the ingenuity that a lot of the gorillas didn't have.
It's
and
true.
So I am just so touched that he got a quality British education and learned about the galaxies.
And he was excited
ride on a bicycle.
Ride on a bicycle is the best part. I also like how it takes Jane all of like 5 seconds to learn how to vine swing like Tarzan.
Oh my gosh. I mean, vine dancing. I'm like,
Ooh, and then they intertwine and then they kind of twist together and there's that silhouette, that yin and yang going on. Oh yeah. I shiver.
Speaking of Tarzan swinging, did anyone ever try to swing on branches like Tarzan when they were younger?
Do not try to swing on something with just one hand, with just one arm.
Yes.
Like a rope swing into a river. Do not try to do it one handed. You will not survive.
I definitely tried to do this on some very flimsy trees, and the branches were probably the size of my finger. Okay, so we know where this is going. And obviously on my first swing, I ended up falling and scratching myself, and I still have the scars to this day to prove it.
Really?
Yikes.
So don't do it, kids. Yeah, one's on my stomach, and I think one's like above my, like right under my eyebrow.
And that was Safety Morgan.
Here are the two lessons that we've learned today. Kids, don't run away from home. And two, don't swing on branches. All right.
Basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And always keep track of what's in your magazine. Be sure to reload at the right time.
Exactly.
Unless you have the magical Clayton gun. That should be like an artifact on, was Clayton a boss on Kingdom Hearts? I wonder.
I don't know.
I have never played Kingdom Hearts. I'm not an expert. Although people seem to think I am. They ask me questions on Twitter and I'm like, I can't.
Oh, do you like that part where Sephiroth and Goofy were like fighting?
I can't help you. I do want to play it. I was a Nintendo girl, never had a PlayStation.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely did not try to swing on vines like Tarzan did, especially not one hand. Don't do it. You will not make it. We kind of get reminded of the central conflict because the boat comes back and it's like, oh, we still haven't seen the gorillas. Dang. I sure wish Tarzan would let us see the gorillas. It's like, will you take us to the gorillas? And Tarzan's like, I can't. Kerchak, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they had to ask who Kerchak was. But anyway,
it didn't work out
until Tarzan's little heartstrings get pulled and Jane's like, well, I'm going to leave. you'll never see me again.
She's like, sneaky.
And then Tarzan uses that, you know, ape ingenuity. If Jane sees gorillas, Jane stay. You know? I'm ragging on Tarzan's voice actor, but I like his voice. I think it's...
I thought it worked.
I think it's cool.
I don't know who the actor is. Like, I looked up his name and still couldn't figure it out, but he's not like a superstar A-list actor, at least in my mind. But I liked his voice. I thought it was great.
And then Glenn Close as Kara. That came out of nowhere. I totally didn't know it was her until I did my research recently. And then I like Clayton schmoozing over Tarzan. And then Clayton comes up. He tries to, like, smooth over Tarzan. He's like, women, so typical. Even if you hadn't grown up a savage, you'd still be lost. It's so true, though.
And then I love his skeezy henchmen when they say something. Uh-huh. And they both, like, look at each other with their, you know, skeezy eyes. And they're like,
Wow. Like, yeah, if we were pirates really dense, now.
Yeah, if we were really dense and couldn't figure out you're the bad guy, you just made it very clear.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, we've clearly pointed out who the bad guys are. Chauvin, there's been a change of plans. And he's just like, and the captain's like, what was that, Mr. Smith? He's like, oh, sorry, Captain. Cough in my throat. Anyway, let's do a backstory on the conspiracy to overthrow the captain. The captain has, like, one line. I'm going back now. Our home country needs us. And a side note, the captain died on the way home. Anyway, and then we get to the moment, you know, through some madness and ingenuity and cross-dressing. Although for Rosie O'Donnell, I don't know. Anyway, never mind. They get Kerchak distracted, and then it all comes crashing down because Clayton betrays them. And then there's the iconic, you lied to me? Or you're like, you betrayed me? You know, from the Disney film. Oh, Kerchak. Like, Tarzan worked so hard to gain his trust, you know, but the call of the woman was too strong for him. And Kerchak's, you know, disowns Tarzan. Ooh, heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, except you just took down the alpha male. That's, like, you should be not allowed back at this point.
That's true.
Tarzan did. I think Kerchak was embarrassed, but also he was threatened by Tarzan's relationship with these, you know, these pale visitors are strange to us. No one is to go near them. You know, and weapons that spout fire. Speaking of Jim Cummings.
And lightning.
Kerchak's like, Tarzan, you must choose the smoothest course. This is your mother's pendant. Anyway, I don't want to get into that again.
Speaking of the mother and father, so Kara finally spills the beans to Tarzan. And it's another one of these, like, pseudo, you lied to me moments. You know, it's the, I have a secret of keeping him your entire life. Like, except for Tarzan takes it very well. He's not like, but so they go to the old treehouse, you know, the Swiss Family Robinson home.
Yeah.
Right.
And they basically show him, you know, this is who you are. In case Tarzan couldn't figure out that, yes, I'm actually like these people and wasn't actually born from the apes. Here are my parents and here are the dead corpses of them.
Kara's like, yeah, if you want, like, that's the corpse of your dead father, you can take his suit and put it on you.
That was so weird! Okay, the other thing is, he's got the suit on perfectly. He's even got the cufflinks in. How in the world does he know how to put in cufflinks?
Because his dad had the cufflinks on when he died. That's why.
Oh man.
Yeah, would you like to rip the suit off the dead body of your father? It's in pristine condition.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Sabor was very particular with her death strokes. Her scratches of doom. Yeah.
So I love when they're going to the boat and he's going away with his suit. And I love that he realizes, okay, if I'm heading to this new world, I have to fit into their customs. This isn't like Jungle to Jungle where the kid had like no idea.
No, Georgia the Jungle. That too.
Yeah. Mimi Suku in Jungle to Jungle had no idea how to adapt to, you know, society, I guess. But Tarzan, he gets it. He's like, okay, if I'm going to this new world, I gotta dress like them.
You know what he might not...
He has been hanging out with the crew for a little bit, so he sees all these pictures. I mean, he's the one that's wanting to, like, you know, propose with flowers and everything. So he's very observant.
He wants to be a part of the world.
Yeah.
Part of your world.
Flipping your loincloth doesn't get you. Anyway, he knew how proper Englishmen dressed because he looked at the slides in the tent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of stuff. And then it ended with the proposal. And he's like, marriage proposal. I automatically understand that.
My mate.
You know what? Oh, yeah. Speaking of mating, Tarzan doesn't get is maybe Jane doesn't really – he kind of is like, and Jane be with Tarzan. Yes. I select you as mate. No choice in this matter.
We don't really understand her feelings. Like, we know she's kind of feeling for him, but at the same time, he's like a complete uncivilized savage. So she might not really be into him.
There was sort of a fascination with him, you know, kind of a Stockholm syndrome, you know, after he rescued her. Because when she was drawing him, she was like, oh, those eyes. Never seen something so intense and manly and husky and beautiful and brawny. And Mr. Porter's like, shall I leave you and the blackboard alone? So she was smitten by him.
Yeah.
You know, but we don't know.
This would be a really hilarious sequel if they, you know, in a different reality, they did go to England. And within 2 weeks, she, you know, gives him the news like, I just want to be friends. You know, how uncomfortable is their existence now? He basically wants to mate for life. And she's like, no, thanks.
She's like, yeah, I kind of met this guy named in London. His name's Mr. Darling. He has a dog named Nana.
Another conspiracy theory.
Peter Pan 2.5. Tarzan comes to reclaim what is his. The Thunder 2. Cue the Jumanji drums. Anywho, it's way too far with these theories.
So, you know, then he goes on the boat, and I love here's my first experience with a big group of humans.
Punch in the stomach, thrown in the brig. Welcome to London.
It's time we gave
him a proper British group.
Exactly.
Gift baskets. Tarzan, King of the Jungle, is no match for iron, you know, for Industrial Revolution era technology.
It's really sad because he realized how out of his element he is there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how he's become adapted to the jungle, and he's like one with the jungle. So I think he realizes real quickly that I'm a fish out of water and I can't be here.
Mm-hmm. At least he had enough time to give out a code red Tarzan yodel. Out to Tantor. How did you like George Costanza's, Tantor's sudden burst of courage and his voice? Sometimes you embarrass me, you know?
I think as a kid I liked it, but now
I love this line. I have had it with your emotional constipation.
Yeah, that was a funny line.
That was a good one.
That was a funny line.
Wait, that's not George Costanza. It's the other guy from Science.
It's Newman.
Or, you didn't say the magic word. Tantor goes crazy, and he totally climbs up the ship. Very spry.
You call me Mr. Pig. I mean, Elephant.
That's true. Tantor's not as gross as Pumbaa. But I could see him as the Pumbaa to Turk's Timon.
Totally.
Although Timon would never turn his back on Simba, because as he said, if it's important to you, we're behind you all the way. Cool.
Oh, you know, so then there's the big battle in the woods. It's not woods, it's a jungle. But I love the classic, oh, you shot me, but it just grazed my arm.
Yeah.
That happens in, like, every movie.
Yeah.
Just barely.
Well, no, John Smith got totally KO'd by that. He got quickscoped by Radcliffe.
There are exceptions. But it seems many times, it's like, oh, we can't be too gruesome. Let's just graze the arm.
Let's shoot him in the hand.
And then
got shot in the hand.
Yeah, Ashitaka got no-scoped by those ladies, and that's technically a Disney
that district. Doesn't count.
Oh, okay. Anyway.
That's Ghibli, which is crazy.
Which is, yeah, that's violence and gore. PG-13, kids. So, the climactic battle, I could use a challenge. After all, once I'm done with you, rounding up your friends will be all too easy! You know, then his hair gets permanently disheveled. I do love Tarzan's moment, where Clayton is like, he's got the gun, and he's like, go ahead, shoot me, be a man, you know, and Tarzan, he has to decide, you know, I'm not an executioner, you know, I have one rule, you know, and I do love the I'm not a man like you line.
Yeah, this is where it goes back to the Jungle Book. It's like, the jungle law says that you must only kill to eat, or kill to keep from being eaten.
That's pretty good. Yeah. The law of the pack. Preach, Akila. But yeah, okay, so that makes sense. Plus, Tarzan's a good guy. And he would never just do that. Death by hanging. Here we go. I love the imagery. He's falling, you know, like Gaston, you can see the little skulls flashing in his eyes, and then the thunder, and you can see the fateful silhouette. Very classy. Thunder too. But it's not graphic, but it's not namby-pamby.
Mm-hmm. Where does this fall on Disney deaths?
It's a pretty good one. I mean, impaled by a ship is pretty good.
Yeah.
Killed by your own henchmen is pretty good. Mm-hmm. Nobody died in Frozen, did they? Except for the parents. But no villains actually died in Frozen.
No villains were harmed in the making.
suddenly aged to death and tossed out of a tossed out of a 500-story building by a chameleon. Didn't know Pascal had it in him.
Anyways, I like
pushed
this.
Off a cliff by a dwarf.
Yeah, there you go.
Or by a centrifugal force of a boulder that you were trying to smother dwarf
with.
Get
it to yourself.
Okay, this one is a pretty good death. There's a lot of falling deaths, although the hardcore Disney fans will argue that it wasn't the fall that killed him, it was the vines and the gravity.
But still, a fall was involved.
Yeah, his neck was appropriately snapped. Yeah, so Clayton gets his ignominious death. And it's kind of an abrupt ending.
Yeah.
But not really, because Tarzan is still, he still doesn't get that he's supposed to say, Tarzan, go with Jane, Tarzan, go with Jane, or Jane, stay with Tarzan. He's just like, well, I guess this is goodbye. And he gets the handshake of doom. Trust me, guys, you do not want the handshake of doom. unless you're at the MTC.
The hand hug.
In which case a handshake can go a long way emotionally. But yeah,
She's laying it out there.
She really was. She's like, so, see you around? And Tarzan's like, yeah, bye. Tarzan now leader of pack. Tarzan now have responsibilities. And Jane's like,
okay, bye.
No, the emperor needs to pop up and be like, you don't meet a girl like that every dynasty. Sorry, Chelsea, go ahead.
Oh, man. But I love it when, like, she does, like, come to her senses. Or, no, the dad was like, I feel like you belong here. Like, okay, first, what dad would ever say that? Yes, my child, go and live in the jungle for the rest of your life. But, yeah, like, what dad would say that? And then, yeah, but then when she finally gets up there, I the kiss is hilarious because he's like, what the crap are you doing to me? And then,
he's
I like this. Let's try this again. I thought it was funny.
Yeah, so, and then the whole jungle is watching, apparently, after they make out.
Yeah. She makes the move. Yeah, are there other Disney movies where the female, I mean, I think of Enchanted, which is another one of Kevin Lima's work. He loves these proactive leads. Women, that is. But, yeah, she's making the moves on Tarzan. She finally gave in to her inner animal. Oh, yeah, that's funny. Then she does that voice, and they're all like, she does the... That one.
Something
and they
like
all
that.
Go, uproar.
They're like, now we understand what's going on.
Yeah.
and then Mr. Porter's like, you know, screw this. Just tell him we got lost in the jungle or something like that.
You never found us. He does
after
the
all, after all, people get lost in the jungle all the time.
My question.
And the captain's like, you still need to pay me.
It's like, sure they dang it.
No, okay, so my question, if you were to run away from society to live with this monkey man that you met, would you want your father there?
Nope.
Yeah, that's my thing. I'm like, let's just start this fresh, just the two of us. We don't need my dad hanging around.
maybe he inconveniently got swallowed by quicksand a few weeks later. Ooh, sinister. Well, there is the, we get to find out because there was the cartoon series, Legend of Tarzan or something like that.
I never saw
It's got all sorts of goofy storylines. Like, at one point, like, Jane's snobby girlfriends, like, from London come over.
What?
And they want to have a picnic. Yeah, yeah. Like, Jane's friends come over. And they're, like, too, you know, prissy and proper. And, there's even one where a nature documentary guy, like, a la, King Kong, he comes to their jungle to film Tarzan. but he wants Tarzan to act. He doesn't want him to be natural, you know. So Tarzan learns about being true to yourself.
So what is this? This becomes like a vacation destination. It seems like people are just stopping by.
Yeah, actually,
like, I was in the neighborhood.
Actually, in the series, there's like a World War One flying ace that just happens to be Jane's friend that just drops by for a visit.
That's right. Okay,
turns out he's a spy for the Nazis.
Yeah.
It gets really big. Also, there's actually an episode where they meet the author of Tarzan, of the book. He's a character, and he meets Tarzan, is inspired, and then writes the book.
Yeah.
So that means that somewhere in the Disney archives, one, there's Adolf Hitler, those old propaganda cartoons, and two, there's this guy. They actually have Edgar Rice Burroughs on the show as a character who shows up, meets Tarzan, is inspired by him, and then writes the story of Tarzan. Get it?
Nice, I get it. That's clever.
Yeah, clever.
Clever. Oh, sequels. Why couldn't you stop?
Okay, so there were two sequels, but we're not going to talk about those. So let's rate it.
I'm going to give this movie 4 stars. I thought it was really good. Lots of really great points. The animation was really cool. Great story. It wasn't one that... It was a lot of really good things with it, but yeah, it doesn't really appeal to my replay value system, I guess. But it was still really good. 4 stars.
I'm torn between 4 and 4.5. I can't be like Meyer and do 4.25. I'll do 4 stars for Tarzan. Well, 4.5. Okay. 4.5. Cause I really like Tarzan. It's definitely in my top 5 Disney films.
Wow.
And,
wow.
I love the adventure factor. I love the hero's rise. You know, to herohood. I love, you know, the law of the jungle and the seriousness and kind of the brutality of the film, I guess you could say. Not to mention the soundtrack. So take away Turk, and it would have probably been a perfect movie, although I think I still stand by my reasoning that Turk was somewhat needed and essential.
I wouldn't go quite to essential, but he was useful.
That's no, Chelsea. You cannot refute his review.
All right. All right. I am sorry.
This is the law of the jungle. Man must not refute review of another man. Ape must not kill ape. Oh, I'm so excited for that movie.
So I am going to give this 4 stars as well. I love this movie. I thought the visuals were just superb. Even watching it 15 years later, wow, that's crazy to say. Holds up. It looks great. The 2D blend with 3D animation is beautiful. The deep canvas, you know, way of animating and the backgrounds were fun. And it brought something new to 2D animation, which was really exciting. I love the characters. I love the songs. I know people like really bash on Phil Collins and they hate him, but I loved Phil Collins and I love this soundtrack. So I'm all thumbs up for this. I thought the sidekicks were a little unnecessary. I would have liked this to be a little bit more serious of a film, and it really could have like gone up an extra notch if they would have got rid of those two characters. But other than that, 4 stars.
You mentioned the animation, and that is another reason why I like this film so much. It's just very unique. Like, they didn't try to be super different, like Home on the Range or even the character design for Atlantis. It was stylized, but at the same time, it was very flowy, very, it demonstrated good principles and good mastery of the medium. Not to mention the challenge that it must have been to do some of these shots. They're just phenomenal. Especially with, you know, deep canvas, you know, allowed for CG cameras, which provide all sorts of, cinematic possibilities. But animating to that in 2D, you know, that's kind of on the level of Roger Rabbit, you know, how they managed to blend that.
Hey, Rose Gilbert, it's Brandon. I'm calling to do my review of Tarzan. I actually really like Tarzan. It's probably one of my favorites of the movies that came after The Lion King. And even though it has some level of popularity, I feel like Disney pushes the film aside for some reason. I don't know why. Because when you look at how much money it made at the box office, it made quite a bit. And it should be ranking up there with movies like Beauty and the Beast, Lion King, and all those films. That's just my opinion. But I also like that it's unique. It's a unique film because it's not like a traditional musical, like, you know, because people were expecting, oh, it's going to be like Lion King and Jungle Book. It's going to have all the characters sing. Yeah, we have a couple of songs where the characters do sing, but mainly you just hear Phil Collins, and that's what also makes it unique is that the soundtrack is mainly pop songs by Phil Collins, and I like his songs. And they might be, if you're not a Phil Collins fan, some people might feel that it doesn't fit the movie, but honestly, all the songs that he sings do, and it adds a little diversity to the pantheon of Disney songs. So I think it works for the film. I know people complain about Rosie O'Donnell as Turk, but actually, I don't mind. I like Turk. Actually, I think she's a very funny character. And the animation is beautiful. Jane is a really good Disney character. I feel she's kind of underrated. I mean, I know she's not a Disney princess, and I don't think she should be included in the line, but as a Disney character, I think she's just as good as, like, Alice and Wendy and other characters that are non-Disney princess kind of characters. And, yeah, that's my review of Tarzan. So I really like it. I think it deserves more attention from Disney, especially since how much money the film made. It won an Oscar. In fact, I think it was the last Disney animated film to win Best Song before Let It Go. So there's a little trivia there.
Hi, Rose Coopers. My name is Sebastian, and I'm a huge Tarzan fan, so I had to get my chance on this podcast. First off, Tarzan was the first movie I saw in theaters. I grew up with the Disney Renaissance, like The Lion King. But for me, Tarzan was always my favorite growing up. I really liked the story. It had no plot holes, and it felt original, and I really liked the characters in the movie. And Turk and Tantor are one of the best Disney sidekicks, and I think that they should have their own movie. I mean, that quote that Tantor gave out, "Are you sure this water is sanitary? It looks questionable to me." I mean, if you grew up with this movie, you just can't let go that quote. It's too funny. Just first off, the animation in Tarzan is just gorgeous. How they can mix 2D animation with 3D backgrounds is just amazing and looks so real. I really like the connection with Kala and Tarzan because it's so well made from the beginning to end. Kala is definitely the strongest Disney mom. She saves and protects several gorillas in the movie. I think Tarzan and Jane are also very well developed characters as they both share strong personalities. I really like that this movie goes into so much emotions at the same time, especially with Kerchak's character. After losing his son, we can really feel his sadness, and I always cry when watching the movie because it's so special. I really love this movie, and for me it's a masterpiece, and I give it 5 stars out of 5. I just think it's sad that this masterpiece is so underrated today. I think it deserves to be up in the vault with the other classics, because this movie is something special for sure. And Jane is a more interesting character than Disney Princess. I think her character is more developed and has more personality that girls can relate to. The music in Tarzan is flawless and so epic and feels so new at the same time. You Will Be in My Heart is so beautiful and Strange Like Me is so inspirational. I think Phil Collins did a great job on the music and the score for the movie. So I also celebrated the 15th anniversary in June 18 and made a tribute to the movie by making my own trailer to show my love for the movie. The reason why I love Tarzan so much is because Tarzan has been part of me growing up and my family. It is a movie that I have shared most with my family, and really it is what we believe the best Disney movie they released. Tarzan, The Lion King, and Dumbo are my inspiration of becoming an animator, as all of them share a strong story, strong music, and characters as well. I also collected a lot on the Tarzan merchandise that was released with the movie because I was a huge Tarzan fan, so I collected the toys that was released from Mattel and McDonald's, and also the video games they released. But really, Tarzan has always been my favorite Disney movie and will always probably be if there's no one that can beat that day. Oh, and for future suggestions of your podcast, I think of maybe Oliver and Company, Dumbo, or Sleeping Beauty. Oh, and Mason, hope you have a great birthday.
Sebastian, you made so many awesome points. Thank you for sending in those voicemails. Really, really great. Thanks.
I love that it means so much to his family.
Yeah, that was cool.
It's a movie that really resonates with them, and as a family, collectively, it's one of their favorite. It's really cool how Disney movies bring people together like that.
Yeah. Our next one is from Dylan.
Hi, Rotoscopers. This is Dylan Mentis, and I'm calling again because I heard you were doing Tarzan and holy nostalgia, Batman. I was in first grade when this came back out in 1999, and I loved it, and I still do. Does anybody remember the Movie Surfers on Disney Channel back then? I think they might still be on, but I'm not sure. I remember back when they went and filmed Phil Collins and NSYNC recording their version of Trash in the Camp, because, you know, no 90s animated movie could go without their R&B / hip-hop cover. And I used to love that, because I used to love NSYNC. Still kind of do like NSYNC. Also, I wanted to see if anybody else remembered when McDonald's used to have these straws, and they were all of the Tarzan characters, and when you sip from it, it would make that sound of that the character makes. So I used to have the Tarzan one, and when I would sip from it, it would go, "Ah!" I can't do that yell. And it used to drive my parents nuts. I wanted to see if anybody else remembers those. McDonald's in general, not to go off topic, but McDonald's in general used to have the best Disney toys in their meals when I was in the 90s when I was a kid. Maybe because it was because I was little, but I'm pretty sure they were better back then. I remember they used to have ones that were little tiny VHS boxes of the Disney movies, and inside they'd have like the little toy, but they'd have like the writing on the back and everything, like a little mini VHS box. I don't know. I'm pretty sure I didn't make that up. I think that was a real thing. Anyways, love this movie. Glad you guys are reviewing it, and can't wait to hear more. Bye.
Okay, Dylan is awesome.
That is a true rotoscoper right there.
Yeah,
and all.
I know. I was so hoping that at some point in time, when he brought in the McDonald's. Okay, McDonald's. I was like, please bring up the quiz that everybody had. Okay, anybody, really, if you remember that, you know, the trivia game that they had for a while, please let us know in the comments on the website, please. Okay.
But I totally agree that McDonald's toys were the bomb.
Totally.
Like,
were.
Now I would never step foot in a McDonald's, but back then, I mean, do you not remember, like, begging for a Happy Meal?
Heck,
like,
yeah.
This just shows how, like, how much we were, you know, mind manipulated by TV because they were always advertising on the cartoons that we were watching. But yeah, I just remember like wanting all the toys and loving when a new movie would come out because they had the coolest toys. And I love when I go to people's houses and you see like the old like 1990s McDonald figurines. Like you'll see like Scar on someone's floor or like Hercules. And I'm like, oh, you rock because you have that.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. All right, our next one is going to be Sammy. Let's hear what Sammy has to say.
Hi, Rotoscopers. My name is Sammy. I just want to finish listening to your 101 Dalmatians podcast, which I absolutely love that movie, so I was really excited about that. You were also talking about Princess Mononoke potentially being a movie that you review, which I love because I love all the Ghibli films, but I didn't know if you had heard of My Neighbor Totoro. They're totally cute. It's a great story about, like, sisters and friendship and all that. And it's just probably one of my favorite things, including the creepy bathtub scene. Hopefully that gets you hooked. Thanks so much for the podcast. Have a nice day.
Huh. Thanks, Sammy.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about My Neighbor Totoro, but I've never had a chance to see it. So that definitely should be, like, our next Ghibli film is that one, because that and Kiki's Delivery Service, but like everyone knows Kiki's Delivery Service. I kind of like to move on to something new.
Okay, next we have one of our longtime fans, Esther, and we're glad to have her back on the podcast.
Hi, Rotoscopers. It's Esther. I'm back. I've got two tidbits to share to kick off this summer. First, I was curious to know more about the Box Trolls film by Laika that's coming out this fall, so I checked the book it was based on out of the library. Here Be Monsters by Alan Snow is about a boy named Arthur who has adventures in the town of Ratbridge, along with a colorful cast of characters. It's a delightful, whimsical tale with a 19th century steampunk feeling to it. Aside from the Box Trolls, other new characters include cabbage heads, rabbit women, and cheeses that run on legs. Yes, wild cheeses. They're flying contraptions, shrinking machines, and secrets underneath the town of Ratbridge. I recommend this book to anybody for their summer reading list, and the drawings by Alan Snow are hilarious and funny. Adorable. Second, having listened to your It's So 90s episode with the animated film A Goofy Movie, I want to ask if you would consider doing a totally 80s podcast with the movie The Chipmunk Adventure, where the chipmunks compete against the Chipettes in a hot air balloon race around the world. Unaware sinister forces afoot. Compared to the recent CGI films about the chipmunks, I think this one holds up so much better. The movie has humor, villains, treasure, and most of all, great songs. And the animation still looks great, but I would like to hear what you guys think of it. So slap on that sunscreen, get yourselves a cold drink, and enjoy summer. Bye!
I love Esther. Her voicemails are awesome. Thank you.
It's really funny she mentions The Great Chipmunk Adventure, because I've never heard of that movie, but people bring it up all the time. Like, people are always saying, like, people are always saying, you need to review this, it's so awesome, and it just came out on Blu-ray apparently a few months ago, which is crazy, it's a big enough deal to get a Blu-ray release, but then again, everything gets a Blu-ray release. Yeah. But I'm kind of interested, because we did do, you know, It's So 90s with a Goofy movie, and we kind of a little bit with the Tiny Toons episode, which is special request of Chelsea. She's been gnawing at the bit to do that one. So I'm interested. Yeah, let's do it. Let's go 80s. Okay, so now we're going to move into our mailbag segment. Some people have been commenting why we haven't read their mail on the episode, and that's because we actually kind of have a bit of a backlog. We have about 30-plus pieces of mail that we're going through, and, you know, we go through some, and then we get more, and we're working through them, and we're trying to do oldest to newest. So if you've sent one in the past week or so, you know, it probably won't be on a few episodes from now, unless you send in a voicemail that's a movie review of the movie that we're doing. We move those to the front because it makes sense to hear your guys' reviews about those movies. So just wanted to let you guys know, keep sending them in to contacts@rotoscopers.com because we love the mailbag segment. So I'm going to read the first one. This one is from Matthew C. It says, first off, since you guys had a nerdy couch discussion in your last episode about animated henchmen, I thought I'd share my favorites. The reason why these are my favorites is probably because when it comes to Disney villain henchmen, I would prefer it when a henchman can actually be of some use to the villain, because I almost want to root for the villain enough to know that they won't always win. So here they go. 5, Felicia from The Great Mouse Detective. 4.
Felicia, my darling.
4, Iago. 3, the Shadow Demons from The Prince and the Frog.
Creeper.
2, Brutus and Nero. Those are good ones.
Yeah, I like those.
2, oops, and 1, Flotsam and Jetsam. Maybe it's because Ursula is my favorite Disney villain, but I love Flotsam and Jetsam. I adore their creepiness, their usefulness to Ursula, and for some reason I really like that she actually seems to care for them, calling them her babies and poopsies. And how their deaths seem to be the last straw for Ursula to make her lose her cool. Anyway, on the real subject, Princess Mononoke. Well, he sent this in for the Princess Mononoke episode, but we had already recorded it, so that's why I'm including it now. Princess Mononoke is the second Studio Ghibli movie I ever saw, first being Spirited Away. I saw it in my 7th grade art class. It was the only time I saw it, so everything I say is just from what I remember. But from what I remember, I was a bit freaked out about how much blood and violence was shown. This was a time before I became weird. But I love the movie anyway. I personally love its themes, from the environmental ones to its anti-war ones. I also liked its strong feminine characters. Now that I know a bit more about Studio Ghibli and Hayao Miyazaki, I know that these are things Miyazaki feels strongly about, and this movie has a lot of his commentaries about these subjects. Since I feel similarly on these subjects as he does, I really resonated with this movie. Overall, this movie is a 5 out of 5 to me. And my favorite 101 Dalmatian character is Lucky, Matthew.
Those are great. I love those. Those henchmen are really, really cool. I like it. I don't know if I would have chosen Felicia from The Great Mouse Detective, but now that you bring it up, I'm like, yes, I like it.
She's so short-lived. Like, you barely see her.
It's true.
I feel like the bat in that movie would be, like, a better henchman. Because she just, like, basically sits in the alley and, like, eats mice. Or geckos or whatever. But interesting. It's good. I like hearing, you know, ones that we didn't think of top of mind.
Mm-hmm.
So our next one is from Natasha. Natasha says, hey, I'm an aspiring 2D/3D artist and animator. I was just listening to your guys for the first time, and I'm already a fan. I was listening to the last Unicorn episode, and the idea that another listener had about the 2D/3D movie was great. It reminded me somewhat of a show I love to watch. All the characters seem to live in a 2D/3D world. It's called The Amazing World of Gumball. It's a very wacky animated TV show, and it's a combination of pretty much any style of animation out there. It's unlike anything that's ever been on TV, as far as I know. Being new to the podcast, I have no idea if you've mentioned this show before or if you even know of it, but I think it's worth checking out. I look forward to listening to more of your episodes. Thanks, Natasha.
I've never heard of this.
I have never heard of it either.
But, like, to be able to see all different types of animation in one show is kind of intriguing.
Yes, I am intrigued. Okay, our next one is from The Heat. Hey, I like your site, Rotoscopers. Your site is superb, as it has lots of information about different companies. You guys are doing an amazing job. Keep going. Smiley face. Thank Thank you. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
We have lots of plans for the website in the next few months, so stay tuned because we are definitely going to be branching out to TV, you know, doing more TV, doing more independent animation, and just making it all around better. It's pretty good now, but it can definitely be better, and so I'm excited to do that. So thank you.
Okay, our next one is from Matt, and Matt says, hello, I just wanted to say I love animation as well. I graduated from college 5 years ago, and I majored in computer animation. I also love the Rotoscopers podcast and your in-depth interviews on animated films. They really help me get through my long days at work. Thank you, Matt. Thanks, Matt. We're glad to have you.
All right, now to close off the mailbag, we're going to read some Tarzan reviews from you guys. First one is from Frank. Hi, Rotoscopers. So when I was young, I actually didn't think much of Tarzan. I knew of the movie, but never cared for watching it. I just wasn't interested in watching it. Eventually, as I got older, I finally did hear about how good. Needless to say, I was not disappointed. Of the Disney Renaissance movies, I think it is one of the top ones. Tarzan, I think, is a very compelling protagonist. You truly understand how conflict with the apes and humans. I also think every scene with him swinging on the vines is fantastic to watch. It's a movie from 1999, and the animation holds up very well. I absolutely love the chase scene with him, Jane, and the apes. I also think that the supporting characters are mostly solid. I like Kala, and I think Glenn Close was a perfect choice to voice Tarzan's ape mother. Kerchek is another good character, and I thought his character was well handled. Personally, my favorite side character was Jane. I absolutely love her personality and spunk. I think her relationship with Tarzan is one of the best things about the movie. When it comes to Disney romances, I think Tarzan and Jane was one of the best. However, I'm not a fan of Turk and Tantor, sadly. I'll agree with you there. As far as Disney comedic relief sidekick characters go, they are one of my least favorite. I also thought that Clayton was a weak villain with a boring motivation. When it comes to the songs, people are mixed about Phil Collins singing for the characters in the movie. Personally, I didn't have a problem with it. I think Tarzan singing would be really awkward. Plus, I thought the songs were fantastic. My personal favorites are You'll Be in My Heart and Strangers Like Me. So yeah, I really like Tarzan. It is one of the top movies in the Renaissance era and Disney canon in general. My only regret is not watching this movie sooner. Frank.
Awesome, Frank. Thanks.
I completely agree with him. I didn't talk about this in the episode about the romance between Tarzan and Jane. I think it's so well handled because it could be creepy, you know, but they do it so well that it's very organic and you understand both of their motivations. And it's not like, we'll be married in the morning. It's very slow moving. And it when it all ends and everything's said and done, you accept it and you actually like it.
Joshua says, here is my opinion on Tarzan. Some things just rub me the wrong way, like some side characters. But I do like the idea of Tarzan seeing the real human world, so I give Tarzan a 6.5 out of 10. Or if you're Rotoscoper scale, that equals 3.25 out of 5. Anyways, I can't wait for episode 70 of your opinions of Disney's 37th animated classic, Joshua.
All right, and our last one is from Ben. He says, hey, Morgan, Chelsea, and Mason. Ben here, giving you my thoughts on Disney's 1999 release, Tarzan. I think Tarzan is such a freaking great movie. Ugh, yes. I'm always put in a good mood when I watch it. Action, adventure, romance, humor, suspense, and talking animals. What more could you want? I think the story is pretty straightforward, but the characters are what drives the plot and what keep you interested. Tarzan's struggle between staying with the apes and leaving with the humans. Jane slowly opening up and becoming one with nature. Kala and Kerchak and Clayton and Turk and Tantor and ASDFGHKL, aka he just slammed every key on the keyboard. I love this movie so much. I love the emotion, the heart that Kala and Tarzan's relationship brings to the film. I think it is the biggest way the audience becomes invested in the movie. I love Tarzan and Jane's relationship too. They're just too cute together. And of course we have Rosie O'Donnell playing Rosie O'Donnell. I actually love Turk as a Disney sidekick, and I think her and Tantar are a great foil for Tarzan. And don't even get me started on the animation. Glenn Keane, deep canvas. The animation is flawless and innovative and truly amazing. But what else do we expect from Disney? The music is great too. You'll Be in My Heart, Son of Man, Strangers Like Me. Some don't like the music in Tarzan, but then again, some people are heartless. I think this is such a fun, exciting, and emotional roller coaster ride, and it's one of my favorites. Can't wait to hear the episode. Ben, play me out, Phil Collins!
Something's been made about the strangers like me.
listening to our episodes recently, we've been doing themes, and this episode's theme was Mason's birthday episode, so it follows no theme. But before, we had been doing animation dogs and animation horses, so we put a poll on the website, and it looks like we are going to be doing dinos and dragons. I felt that those were kind of similar, so I just lumped them into a big, you know, category. So I think we're probably going to do 5 or 6 episodes that relate to dragons or dinosaurs. Dinosaurs seem to be very popular in animation, and I'm not going to lie, I kind of want to do We're Back.
You've been talking about that one for a really long time.
Oh my gosh, I love We're Back, even though it's so weird. Like, it's so weird. Anyway, so our next episode, it's the most popular, most requested, is Land Before Time, episode 71. We're going to do Bluth's Land Before Time, one of my favorite movies.
We're doing the 71st episode of Land Before Time?
Yes, it's Land Before Time, episode 71.
Yes, that's the best out that way.
So if you want to send in your voicemails and emails of your reviews of that movie, be sure to send the emails to contact@rotoscopers.com. And then also send us a voicemail at rotoscopers.com/voicemails with an S. We're actually having a problem with our voicemail link, and I can't figure it out. So make sure to add an S, rotoscopers.com/voicemails, and it will get you there.
Awesome. Land Before Time, 71. Holy moly, guys. This was such a great, amazing episode. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes. If you want to keep up with the Rotoscopers, be sure to go to rotoscopers.com. That's where you can stay up to date with animation news, and you can find all of our social media links there. You can also find us on Hypeable and Animated Views, Stitcher and iTunes, basically anywhere where good podcasts are found. Leave us a review if you haven't already. We appreciate it. And then, of course, go to the comments on this episode, rotoscopers.com/70. This is where you can all go to chime in your thoughts, give us your reviews if you weren't able to send in your voicemails or your mailbag, and we will be there. We'll be commenting. It's going to be a jungle of a time, if that's even a phrase. I don't think it is, but I just made it up.
So I like it.
Just go. It's fun. I love the comments on the website. I spend a lot of time there, and you should too. All right, guys. Until next time.
We are the Rotoscopers.
Yeah, that's a strange thought. You should probably pass that on to the Disney theory guy.
Oh,
anyway, my God.
Cut that.
Please cut that. Please cut that.
I thought it would be a blooper.
I'm just adding fuel to the fire. Don't even make that a blooper.
Don't even make that
too controversial for the podcast to handle. Anyway.
Oh, it's like when he comes up with him on top of him, it's like, oh, man, that's a pimpin' coat right there.
Hey, you can switch out the old loincloth for a Sabor skin.
There you go. Yeah, that's totally what he should have done.
Yeah, I made like a headdress like Hercules did with the lion or the man or whatever that was supposed to be. Morgan, and your line is...
Sorry, I'm watching a Disney princess impressions video. If I could do it better than this girl.
You could. You have a great bell.
Well, that's why I was looking to see, like, this girl's pretty good. I'll include the link for you both. And sorry, got distracted. Where am I?
Hey, am I the only one who thinks that Nakoma should have gotten with the rookie?
Coco, I'm totally.
Oh, not Coco, no, the rookie Thomas? English guy. Thomas,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's a match made in heaven.
That would have been good.
He's a poor excuse for a soldier and a slipshot.
And he's Christian Bale in his hunkiness.
He is?
Yes.
It's Christian Bale?
Christian Bale. This is why we need to do a Pocahontas episode.
We really do. Puedes pintar con los colores de la montaña. Anyway.
But Hunchback of Notre Dame's dark and serious, and that's very epic.
Hey, I don't really like that film to begin with, so I don't have an opinion.
What?
Sorry. Bad history of that movie. Actually, truth be told, I never saw it all the way through.
You and your movies from the 1996 to 1997 era.
Okay, in my defense, my parents didn't like it, so we never got on VHS. And when I went to see it, the theater shut down. It broke. The theater projection screen broke down, so I never got to see it. I did go to see it in theaters.
I see.
All right, what number is this, 70? Golly, 70 episodes, guys.
I know.
Now you know.
What have we done with our lives?
Years of academy training wasted.